Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 1 of For the Record program number 618, titled Veterans Day Interview with John Loftus. This is being recorded on November 11th of the year 2007. Once again, it's my pleasure and privilege to present, my laryngitis notwithstanding, John Loftus, author of, among other titles, The Belarus Secret and The Secret War Against the Jews, and a new book that he's going to be telling you about, and an individual who, in my opinion, is a genuine American hero. John, welcome back once again to our airwaves.
Well, thank you, Dave, and it's always good to plug the new book. This is a little different for me. You know, usually my books are nonfiction, very dry, documented histories.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not going to reach the new generation. So my friend Brendan Howley from Canada and I worked on a historical novel. It's called The Witness Tree. It has just come out in Random House Canada. So you can go to Amazon.ca, not Amazon.com. That's the U.S. side. We're not published here yet. But it's a wonderful little story. And here's how it goes. This is a perfect story for Veterans Day. This is the dialogue is fictional, but the story is fact. Eleanor Dulles came from a prominent WASP family. During the 1930s, she married a Jew. Her husband committed suicide under very mysterious circumstances. She then discovered that her two older brothers, Alan and John Foster Dulles, after whom the airport is named, Alan became head of CIA, John Foster became Eisenhower's Secretary of State. But back in the 30s, her brothers were the lawyers for Hitler's financial backers, guys like Nelson Rockefeller, the Wall Street robber barons, Prescott Bush, the grandfather of the current president of the United States. All of these men, during the Great Depression, moved their money out of the U.S. to escape Teddy Roosevelt's antitrust, anti-cartel laws. One of the reasons the Great Depression happened was they took their investments and went to Germany. Now, Eleanor discovered that her brothers were in bed with the Nazis, and she ended up getting the blackmail information on Nelson Rockefeller to recruit him for the Zionist cause, and Nelson was the one who turned around the votes in the UN to get enough extra votes to create the State of Israel.
By the way, you talked about that in a non-fiction context in The Secret War Against the Jews.
Yep, mentioned it there. But this is much more in-depth. This goes into what the Bush families, the Dulles families did with Hitler. Everybody knows that President Kennedy's dad bought Nazi stocks, but what they don't know is that he bought them from Prescott Bush.
Fascinating. Can you tell us just a little bit, John, about how it was that the Rockefellers, and perhaps fill in where the Rockefellers fit in vis-a-vis the financing and arming of Germany and later Nazi Germany, and
sure,
then explain how Nelson suddenly became, you know, the point element of what really was a blackmail, a realpolitik program to get Israel established.
Yeah, what happened was, when Teddy Roosevelt was president, he passed all these monopoly and anti-cartel laws. And in 1918, Rockefeller and his cronies passed a loophole law called the Webb-Pomeroy Act of 1918. And the Webb-Pomeroy Act said you can have cartels and monopolies overseas, but just not in America. So from 1918 through 1929, these guys took every dime they had in available capital and moved it out of New York City, and along with their British partners from the Brown Brothers Investment Bank. The company was called Brown Brothers Harriman. And the Harrimans were sort of the Democratic partners of this. This is a bipartisan scandal. But they were able to buy up German corporate stock for a song. So the German currency was worthless. You needed a wheelbarrow full of marks to buy a loaf of bread. But German stock was priceless because the German companies owned the priceless patents, the high-tech basis for worldwide monopolies. And Rockefeller and the other guys were actually trying to put together a worldwide patent monopoly based in Germany, where monopolies were legal, and that would squeeze all the Western powers into submission. They called the Dusseldorf Patent Conference of 1939, but Hitler wrecked their plans with his invasion of Poland. But this was just strictly murder. These guys didn't like Hitler. They really liked the Catholics and conservative parties. But, you know, Hitler to them was a dog on a chain. They funded his rise to power, gave them money to buy the build the Brown House, the first Nazi Party headquarters. Now, the principal partner in Germany was something called the Thyssen Company. It's now called the ThyssenKrupp Corporation. It's the largest conglomerate in Europe and the most wealthy. ThyssenKrupp is all over the U.S. Krupp made the armaments for the Third Reich. Thyssen made the steel to build the battleships, the planes, and the steel for the bombs and bullets. So they were two of the leading warlords. Both men were served sentences as war criminals after World War II, but were pardoned. Thyssen had a real game plan going. There were three Thyssen banks. These were all designed by Alan Dulles. One in New York City, headed by Prescott Bush. That was the American front for the Nazi companies. The one in Holland, headed by one of their associates. And one in Germany, called the August Thyssen Bank. So at the end of the war, no matter which side won, the banks would swap the corporate stock around and claim, oh, no, we're not a German company. We're a Dutch company, or we're an American company. Give us back our money. That's exactly what happened. They got all their money back. It was the only Nazi company to survive the war intact, thanks to the help of guys like Allen Dulles and Prescott Bush. Now, Nelson Rockefeller was heavily involved in this. I found the Dulles files that I talked about, you know, setting up cloaking arrangements for Brown Brothers, Schroeder, Rock. Brown Brothers was the British banking firm. Schroeder was the Nazi bank. And Rock, of course, was Rockefeller. And I found confirmation that the Rockefellers Chase Manhattan Bank is indeed one of the secret owners of the ThyssenKrupp Corporation.
And, John, the new book is called, again, the title?
The Witness Tree. It's by Random House Canada. So you can go to Amazon.ca, not .com, Amazon.ca for Canada, and order a copy there.
And basically, what the way that Nelson Rockefeller was turned into a de facto pro-Zionist agent was by blackmailing of about...
Oh, yeah, just giving aid and comfort to the enemy in time of war is treason. And this would not have been good for Nelson's political career. He had to do what they wanted. Now, the vote came up on November the 29th. On the 26th, which is a Wednesday, the Arab states had a couple of test motions to try and see how much strength the pro-Zionist delegates had. And the Arabs were defeated on a Wednesday, but barely. The Zionists were nowhere close to the two-thirds majority they would need. If the same vote held up over the next 3 days, then on Saturday, the partition of Palestine would be defeated, and there would be no Israel. And that's when the Israelis dropped their information that Eleanor had given them on Allen's desk and told him what he had to do. And in 3 days, Allen Dulles turned around every vote in Latin America. He was our Latin American coordinator of information during World War II. He was our spy boss down there. So Nelson got every nation in Latin America to either vote in favor of the State of Israel or abstain, which was just as necessary to cross the two-thirds threshold. The only nation that wouldn't budge was Cuba. They voted against Israel. All the rest changed sides. One of the most dramatic acts of blackmail in the history of the UN.
And remind me, John, to promote your book at the end of this side and also side two. If I should forget, I don't think I will, but let's make sure we get in another plug.
People need to know that some of America's finest families began with their hands in blood.
And that then one of the families that is deeply involved in this, of course, is the Bush family, front and center today. John, before we move on to discussion of events relevant to some of the things going on in the Middle East and elsewhere, this is Veterans Day, and my first encounter with your work more than two decades ago was in the context of your work for OSI. I wonder if you could sort of encapsulate for us your work for OSI and also your discovery of the Crusade for Freedom. It may be that some of the listeners, including some of the younger listeners,
sure,
figure, well...
It's history to a lot of people.
Well, yeah, exactly.
25 years ago, from 1979 to 1981, I was a lawyer from the headquarters of the Department of Justice assigned to work on the Nazi war crimes cases. This is back during the Carter and Reagan administrations. And I discovered, much to my horror, that many of the Nazis had been assigned to prosecute were already on the government payroll. And the CIA didn't know it because they had been brought into the U.S. By the British Secret Service, a guy by the name of Kim Philby, who was a communist double agent. And we thought he was sending us anti-communist freedom fighters. He was sending us the dregs of the Nazi war criminals of Eastern Europe, people whom the Soviets could blackmail into betraying CIA secrets. It was a horrible success. This is another one of Allen Dulles' little gifts to America. So we ended up with you know, literally thousands of these Eastern European Nazi war criminals in America. And I found this stuff in these underground secret vaults, you know, a half century later, and I was horrified. My dad's generation didn't fight World War II to make America safe for Nazi retirement. It's not what Veterans Day is about. It's not about German veterans. It's about American veterans. So, you know, I got a little stubborn, dug in my heels, ended up testifying before Congress, becoming a whistleblower in 60 Minutes. And we had a great time. Mike Wallace gave me half of his program. Congress demanded hearings. Mike Wallace got the Emmy Award. My family got the death threats. It was a great trade-off.
Before we move to discussion of some contemporary things, John, it may be, too, that people, younger listeners in particular, think that this stuff is peripheral. You mentioned that you were researching for OSI during the Carter and Reagan administrations, and in The Secret War Against the Jews, you talk about something called the Crusade for Freedom. And before we go to the Muslim Brotherhood, which was really in some ways our association with that was an outgrowth of this same dynamic.
The Crusade for Freedom was an intelligence front group. The spokesman for it was a young man named Ronald Reagan. That's who Ronald Reagan is. He was a guy that was involved in Alan Dulles' covert activities with the Nazis back in as early as 1949. We have newsreels of him, you know, asking people to raise their money and send it to the Crusade for Freedom. 99% of the money did not come from public donations, but out of the CIA's and vouchered funds.
And this was basically a repository for these Nazi elements that you were investigating.
That's how the Nazis got paid, yes.
Before we move to
Ronald Reagan's charity.
The role in the Crusade for Freedom, and bear in mind that you were looking into this during the Carter and Reagan administrations, three people played roles in this dynamic. One, Richard Nixon. Tell us about his role in this.
Ugly little guy. When he was vice president, he really was in charge of the covert operations. Eisenhower said he didn't want to know too much about the Nazi things, so Nixon took it over. Now, Nixon, actually, we think, and I mentioned Secret Wars, when he was a young naval officer, right after World War II, he was reviewing all the German contract documents at the Brooklyn Naval Shipyard in New York. And apparently he found something because he went running to Alan Dulles. The next thing you know, Alan Dulles is funding Richard Nixon's run for Congress against Helen Hagen Douglas. And within 6 years, he was Vice President of the United States. Nice to have friends like the Dulles brothers.
Yep. And for younger listeners, too, Helen Hagen Douglas is the mother of actor Michael Douglas. Another luminary involved with this dynamic was William Casey, Ronald Reagan's Secretary of State. Tell us about Casey's role in the Crusade.
Casey was, before he was head of the SEC, he was in charge of another one of the front companies that laundered money to the Nazis. He was an old intelligence veteran of World War II. And Casey afterwards set up covert operations that people couldn't trace. See, we didn't get all the Nazis. The Arab Nazis stayed in the Middle East. The Arab Nazi group was, as you mentioned, the Muslim Brotherhood. It started in 1928, big admirers of Hitler, heavily penetrated by the communists and the British intelligence service. But the Muslim Brotherhood was 500,000 members strong during World War II. They were going to be the secret army of the Third Reich. And they started the Iraqi Nazi coup of 1941 and a few other covert ops, none of which came to much. Saddam Hussein's uncle, the man who raised him, was a member of the Muslim Brotherhood. So was Anwar Sadat. So was, practically anyone you can name in Middle Eastern politics. They were all Nazis when they were kids. The British Secret Service, Kim Philby again and his dad, hired the Muslim Brotherhood at the end of World War II and hid them. None of them were prosecuted as war crimes, even the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem. The head of the Muslim Brotherhood was one of the most wanted war criminals in the Middle East. Of course, when the Muslim Brotherhood failed in their assault on Israel in 1948 and retreated back to Egypt, Nasser got a little nervous about this giant Nazi army he dismissed, and he ordered them expelled in 1953. Now, by this time, Philby had sold the Muslim Brotherhood entirely to Alan Dulles, who had just was on the verge of becoming head of the CIA. So Dulles asked his good buddy, the Saudis, who are also pro-Nazi, amazingly so, to take in the Muslim Brotherhood. And the Saudis were delighted because they thought, well, look at this group of people who are literate. They can become school teachers in our madrasas. Now, the Saudis, to begin with, already had a very bigoted religion. It was actually a cult, a heresy against Islam called Wahhabism. And there's an old analogy that Wahhabism is to Islam as the Ku Klux Klan is to Christianity. So he already had this hugely bigoted religious base that hated Jews and Christians in Saudi Arabia from the Wahhabist tendency. And with that now came the Nazi racism. So you had Nazi teachers raising young kids who were steeped in Wahhabism. It was a perfect storm of hatred and racism. And that's how the doctrine we know as Al-Qaeda was formed. Osama bin Laden, for example, his childhood mentor. Was an Arab Nazi.
So, John, I'd like to just take a second here to tie some of this together. Basically, the Muslim Brotherhood, and we'll talk about some of the things that came out of that, its recrudescence after World War II was the outgrowth of some of this same, perhaps we could call it misguided doctrinaire anti-communism, in which, as Alan Dulles put it, any expletive deleted as long as he's anti-communist.
Yeah.
And those, basically, we've been experiencing blowback. But this recrudescence of Nazi elements after the war and using some of the most heinous ones in order to fight communism, basically was the genesis of some of the things that we're experiencing today.
And, the Arab Nazis grew up and became Al-Qaeda. And the Muslim Brotherhood is the parent organization of most of the Sunni-based terrorist groups. We are fighting the Middle East because we didn't finish World War II. We never rounded up the Arab Nazis. The British Secret Service hired them, sold them off to Alan Dulles. We've been keeping it under wraps for years. The last time we used the Muslim Brotherhood openly was as recruiters for the Mujahideen in Afghanistan to go fight the communist Russians.
Before we get to the Mujahideen, and then we'll jump to some of the more modern stuff for the duration of the broadcast, including my buddy and someone that you've spent a long time fighting. I call him Sammy the Aryan, Sammy Al-Aryan. But you mentioned Kim Philby, John, and a friend of mine turned me on to an interview. I think it was in Spiegel. It was one of the mainstream German publications, but it was an interview with Kim Philby's former KGB or NKVD, I guess it was in those days, handlers, who said specifically that Kim Philby was recruited by Soviet intelligence to spy on his father, Jack Philby, who was a really important person. Most people have never heard of Bridger St. John Philby, as his full name was. But happily, you wrote about him at great length in Secret War Against the Jews. And Jack Philby.
He got the American oil contracts for Saudi Arabia. He was the guy that got the Americans to penetrate the British monopoly on oil on the Arabian Peninsula. He did it because he had something in common with the Saudis. Jack Philby was a Nazi. He was imprisoned as one during World War II by the British, for his pro-Nazi points of view. But he converted to Islam and moved to Mecca and became the financial advisor for the House of Saud. So we had this Nazi expatriate who became the representative for the American oil companies. A strange and sick little world, huh?
Yep, and you point out in Secret War that basically you have Alan Dulles with his Nazi sympathies and Jack Philby with his Nazi affiliations, and then you have King Ibn Saud, and those three founded, if we could call it that, modern Saudi Arabia.
Yep, they really were. They were the trio that put this evil state together. I think Saudi Arabia is an evil state. I mean, it's, you know, over 55% of the insurgents in Iraq today are from Saudi Arabia. We have senior Saudi religious and government officials encouraging people to go into Iraq and kill Americans. The Saudis subsidize mortgages for 80% of the mosques in the world. They are exporting a virulent heresy called Wahhabism all over the U.S. and Canada. It's a disaster. Now, I'm doing a lot of stuff on my radio show, LoftusReport.com.
Oh, John, right now, as long as the subject has come up, tell us about your radio and TV appearances so that people can follow you more regularly.
What I do three nights a week is we do a very advanced intelligence news show called LoftusReport.com. Now, you can catch it live in New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, or along the east coast of Florida. But the rest of the country will have to go to the website and listen live. And we post a lot of good information there. But my guests are primarily people from the intelligence community from around the world. And you get the news that most people don't even think about on our show. Often the news, you get the news 48 hours before it hits the mainstream press.
Mm-hmm. And we'll get those times. I'll have that in the description for the program, the specific times and where people can tune in, or the website, and or the website where people can get that as well. Before we move to the subject of what's going on today, I want to call people's attention not only to what you were talking about with Saudi Arabia, but the fact that the Saudis today the Saudis today are funding Middle Eastern studies programs at American universities, and also people like Prince Al-Walid and other princes are buying into media in a big way in this and other countries. AOL Time Warner is controlled by, that's the largest media corporation in the world, and Al-Walid and others control that. He's the second largest stockholder behind Rupert Murdoch himself and News Corp, and also the second largest stockholder in Berlusconi's European media empire.
How about CNN?
Oh, yeah, but they're all over the place. And yep. I think people should be aware of the nature of the entity that is weighing heavily, not only on America's media landscape, but America's academic landscape. And their Nazi inclinations are not something long ago and far away. In the 90s, the Saudis hired William Grimstead, an American neo-Nazi, as a Washington lobbyist. So they haven't changed their stripes in any way.
No, they haven't. And, you know, unfortunately, some of the Bush family still think the Saudis are our allies. No, they're our enemies. The Treasury Department said recently if they could just have one government in the world that would stop funding terrorism, we would wish the Saudis would stop funding it.
John, you have been pursuing an individual who sadly is a hero to a lot of people in the so-called progressive sector.
Samuel Arian was one of the members of the Muslim Brotherhood. He started a splinter group in Egypt. He was one of the founding members in Cairo called the Palestinian Islamic Jihad. Now, PIJ doesn't run charities in the Palestinian areas. What it does is recruit suicide bombers and assassins. That's pretty much all that they do. The British and Israeli intelligence services knew all about Samuel Arian because they had an agent inside the headquarters of the PIJ in Damascus, Syria. And Al-Arian had moved to the Tampa Bay area and had become an engineering instructor at the University of South Florida, but his real mission was to organize the Muslim Brotherhood entities in this area and to raise funds for the Palestinian Islamic Jihad. So we have, you know, movies of the guy attending these conferences where people say, we are here to raise money for jihad. Who will give us $500 to kill a Jew? None of this money will go to the organization. This is all for jihad. That's who Samuel Arian was. My favorite wiretap wasn't introduced at his trial because it came from one of our allied intelligence services. But in it, Arian is screaming over the phone that the Hamas terrorist group is taking credit for the killings that Samuel Arian paid for. And this was hurting his fundraising in America. So that's who Samuel Arian is. He was the founder of a terrorist group. He was the major finance guy for a terrorist group. So he pled guilty to it. And the court said, so you have to admit, for a guilty plea, that you lied to the press, you deceived people, that you really were a supporter of terrorism. And he said, yeah, okay. So he got a light sentence in return for that, because the government, quite frankly, screwed up the trial. Some of us think deliberately. But anyway, got grabbed by another section of the Justice Department, was hauled into Northern Virginia, and was called in to testify before the grand jury as to how the Saudis financed him. And even when given immunity, he refused to testify. And then the judge slapped him with a criminal contempt of court thing and threw him in prison. Now, Sammy's been in prison for more than a year, but an odd thing happened this week, David.
What's that?
A record pops up from the federal prison system that Samuel Arian is no longer within federal custody. That can be one of two things. Either they've put him in the witness protection program as an informant, which would be wonderful because he can take everybody down, or Sammy's friends in the government quietly released him and let him go.
Speaking of Sammy's friends in the government, John, one of the things
the Bush family?
Like the Bush family. One of the things that's astounding to me, and bear in mind that I'm based on the left coast out here, and although California is a wonderful place, some of the cliches about some of the nuttiness have an element of truth to them. And Samuel Arian is considered a hero, and there's a disturbingly large group of people out here who subscribe to the nutty stuff about
We had the local newspaper, the St. Pete Times, was always on Sammy's side, and they were shocked because I sued Samuel Arian.
Right.
I donated money to his charity, then filed a civil suit, and I had all this incredible intelligence information exposing him as a major sponsor of terrorism. And it embarrassed the government so much that they finally went and prosecuted him, and Sammy finally confessed. But the local papers here were so hugely embarrassed that they attack me, saying, well, Sammy's a good guy. I'm the bad guy for pointing him out. Okay. Look, this is a man who believes in killing innocent men, women, and children. Forget about, religion. Anyone that wants to kill babies, I draw the line there. When I was a Nazi war crimes prosecutor working in the Arab Nazis or working on these terrorist groups, they're about as bad as you can get. And anyone who embraces Samuel Arian, he doesn't speak for the Palestinian cause. He was paid by the other Arab states to wreck every Palestinian chance for peace. Because Samuel Arian's organization didn't just kill Jews. they killed the Palestinians who were willing to work with Israel for peace. Sammy Lyon is the enemy of peace. Any one of my progressive friends that support him, all I can say is you've made a huge mistake.
On my website, John, I have a picture of a Palestinian Islamic Jihad campaign rally from April of 2005. And they are, like a lot of these jihadist groups, they use the Nazi salute. They use the fascist salute. There is no ceremonial or procedural antecedent in Islam for that particular salute. That is a Nazi/fascist
salute. The Hamas faction to this day still uses the Nazi salute and the goose step. And then they're not neo-Nazis, they're just the sons of the real World War II Nazis, the guys who were never prosecuted.
And Hezbollah and the Iranian Revolutionary Guards do the same thing.
Don't forget that the Khomeini, the founder of the Iranian Revolution in 1979, he too was a great admirer of the Arab Nazi movement and read all the books of Qutb, the Muslim Brotherhood's propagandist in chief.
On side two, John, we're nearing the end of side one. We've got a couple of more minutes. But one of the things I'd like to do, too, you were talking about some of Samuel Arian's powerful friends. And out here on the West Coast, we've also got a lot of these people who subscribe to the controlled demolition of the World Trade Center stuff and that sort of thing.
I think Noam Chomsky put it best when he said that anyone who describes that theory is an idiot. There is no evidence whatsoever of controlled demolition. All the evidence is the contrary. The whole idea of conspiracy theories of 9/11 is patently absurd.
The funny thing is that it's not just demonstrably incorrect, it's physically impossible. But the funny thing about that, too, is that these same people often lionize Samuel Arian, and they do not look at who Samuel Arian's friends are. When you began pursuing Samuel Arian, you came across the SAR network and the March 20th Green Quest raids of 2002. I wonder if you could continue this on Sadu. Tell us about that.
I filed my lawsuit. Mm-hmm. I got a frantic call from the U.S. Justice Department saying, please don't file your lawsuit against Samuel Arian tomorrow because you identify the address of the Saudi charities exactly where Arian's been getting all his money. And we're going to raid those places. Just give us a little more time. I said, I know you're going to raid him. I mean, this we told him in January and again in February, and now it's March. You want more time? You get till 10 o'clock tomorrow. Because I'm going to file a complaint and name those places and say that the Justice Department has known that the Saudis were funding Al Arian as a terrorist for years and did nothing to stop him. So I filed my lawsuit at 10 o'clock. At 10:15, the U.S. government launched Operation Green Quest, a raid on the same Saudi charities at 555 Grove Street, Herndon, Virginia, just as I had specified in my complaint. What a coincidence. But in 1 hour, we shut down the entire Saudi money laundering system in America.
And, John, well, this pretty much wraps up side one. We're going to talk about some of the friends of these people that got interdicted on March 20th of 2002. Very briefly, give us your website, which has articles, by the way, that talk about many of the things, such as the Thiessen-Bush connection.
The new website is loftusreport.com. That's where you can get the archives of my new radio show. And my personal website is john-loftus.com.
And what are the three times that your program is on during the week?
I'm on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday nights from 11 o'clock till midnight Eastern Standard Time. And you can click listen live on our website or on the website of talklinecommunications.com.
And your new book is?
The Witness Tree by Brendan Howley and John Loftus. It is an amazing story of the men who financed Hitler and how they got blackmailed into getting the extra votes in the UN to create the State of Israel.
All righty. We're going to be continuing with our Veterans Day interview with John Loftus in Side 2. This, however, concludes Side 1. I also want to encourage people to visit my website and the linked websites, which have a tremendous amount of supplemental information, including the declassified government documents about the Bush family's involvement with Nazi industry that you, John, and Mr. Buchanan wrote about in the New Hampshire Gazette. Those are now available online.
Oh, yeah.
So people can check that out. However, this concludes side 2-1 of For the Record program number 618, Veterans Day interview with John Loftus. For John Loftus, this is Dave Emery with laryngitis saying thanks for listening.